This is Free Speech Radio News for Wednesday, December 2nd, 2009. From New York City, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up on today's newscast, officials in the Obama administration face tough questions from the Senate about the plan for Afghanistan. We'll go to Afghanistan and hear from people on the ground as they react to Obama's speech on the troop increase.
Is it the right way to solve Afghanistan's problem?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. No, this is not the way to solve the Afghan crisis. The additional troops coming to Afghanistan, this will increase human losses and casualties to both sides.
And senators debate health care. A possible amendment on abortion threatens to stall the process. Those stories and more right after the headlines.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for Free Speech Radio News. The U.S. House Financial Services Committee approved legislation today that will give the federal government expanded powers to regulate the financial industry. The new regulations seek to prevent future scenarios where companies that are deemed too big to fail are bailed out by taxpayers. The legislation also opens up the Federal Reserve to congressional audits for the first time in history. The bill will now go to the full House. Although runoff election results in the Atlanta mayoral race remain uncertified, preliminary indications show that Kasim Reed has won by less than 1,000 votes. Reed looks poised to maintain nearly four decades of African Americans holding the mayoral office. His challenger, Mary Norwood, who led in the original November election, says she will call for a recount. A U.S. brokered deal between Honduran de facto President Roberto Micheletti and ousted President Manuel Zelaya called for the Honduran Congress to make the final decision on Zelaya's restoration to the presidency. Just after 10 a.m. this morning, the Honduran Congress began debate on the issue. Tim Russo brings us this update from Tegucigalpa.
Hundreds of people gathered in front of the Honduran Congress Wednesday morning to demand the restoration of Manuel Zelaya to the presidency. Riot police and water cannons blocked the protesters from entering the building. Earlier this month, the Honduran Congress postponed the vote on whether to reinstate Zelaya, requesting an opinion from the Supreme Court and choosing not to address the issue until after last Sunday's controversial presidential elections. The Supreme Court previously ruled that Zelaya's reinstatement would be unconstitutional. Last week, it reconfirmed that stance. Today's congressional decision could define or complicate the international community's decision to recognize or reject the outcome of last Sunday's elections. The Organization of American States has led the call for Zelaya's reinstatement, and Brazil said they will not recognize the elections if Zelaya is not restored to power. For his part, Zelaya says he will not return to power even if the decision falls in his favor. He criticizes the Honduran Congress for delaying the vote. Tim Russo, FSRN, Tegucigalpa.
The government of the Philippines has expanded its probe into the politically motivated killing of 57 people last week. Today, it announced it is charging the head of the powerful Ampatuan family with seven counts of murder. Prosecutors say Provincial Governor Andol Ampatuan Sr. was involved in the massacre. Ampatuan's son, Andol Jr., was charged yesterday with similar crimes. In addition, five other members of the family and several other regional officials were charged. Relations between the United States and Japan are tense right now because of disagreements over the presence of a U.S. military base on the islands of Okinawa. Japan's new government wants to assert more independence, and the Okinawa base is threatening to be a battleground. Tomorrow, negotiations between the two countries are set to resume in Tokyo. The U.S. presence in Okinawa has always been contentious, and new revelations about a secret pact from the 1970s is prompting controversy in Japan. FSRN's Shuhei Nakayama has the story.
At the end of World War II, the U.S. took control of Okinawa. They held power until 1972, when the islands were restored to Japanese control. Details of a secret pact governing that power transfer emerged on Tuesday as an ex-Japanese diplomat testified in court. The diplomat, 91-year-old Bunroku Yoshiro, said the agreement forced Japan to pay $4 million for restoration of the land used by U.S. forces. The U.S. was supposed to shoulder the entire cost. The testimony opens up discussion on another secret pact that allowed the U.S. to dock nuclear-armed ships in Japan, despite its ban on nuclear weapons. The previous Japanese government had denied the existence of both pacts, but the new government has launched an official investigation. Shuhei Nakayama, Free Speech Radio News.
A human rights group in India-administered Kashmir says thousands of bodies have been found in unmarked graves across the region. Today, it's taking its findings to the government, calling for an international probe to verify the identity of those buried. The group suspects that the graves contain civilians dubbed by the police as militants. Shahnawaz Khan reports from Kashmir.
The International Tribunal on Human Rights and Justice in Indian-administered Kashmir, or IPTK, calls its report buried evidence, referring to the over 2,700 graves, mostly unmarked, found in the region. The government says the graves contain militants killed on the borders, but IPTK says many are victims of extrajudicial and arbitrary executions as well as massacres committed by Indian security forces. Angana Chatterjee, one of the report authors, says the unmarked graves have a reasonable correlation with the people who have disappeared in the region. IPTK members said its findings are only the tip of the iceberg, as its investigations were limited to some 55 villages in northern Kashmir. Independent investigation in all Kashmir districts could reveal more unmarked graves. Shahnawaz Khan, FSRN, Srinagar.
And finally, the New York Senate voted today on same-sex marriage legislation.
Announce the results.
Ayes 24, nays 38.
The bill is lost.
And that's headlines for Free Speech Radio News from Eugene, Oregon. I'm Jess Burns.
This is Dorian Marina in New York. One day after President Obama laid out his plan to expand the war in Afghanistan, members of his cabinet were dispatched to Capitol Hill to sell the war to lawmakers. The plan includes sending 30,000 more U.S. troops to the country. Lawmakers were assured that the proposed timeline to begin a withdrawal, July of 2011, will not be a quick retreat, and an American presence could remain for years to come. FSRN's Leanne Caldwell reports.
Members of Obama's cabinet appeared once again before Congress to sell a war in need of more money, more people, and more resources. Responding to criticism about Obama's 18-month exit strategy, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton told the Senate Armed Services Committee that the U.S. would have a presence in Afghanistan for years to come.
As we have with so many other countries, troops in a limited number of countries around the world. Some have been there for 50, 60 years, but we have long-term economic assistance and development programs in many others, and we think that's a likely outcome in both Afghanistan and Pakistan, that we would be there with a long-term commitment.
Though the officials assured lawmakers that nation-building is not a goal of the escalated war. While Republicans applauded the president's decision to send 30,000 more troops, they criticized his proposal to withdraw them in 18 months. Senator John McCain, Republican of Arizona.
The expectation level, the American people, because of the president's speech, is that we will be withdrawing as of July 2011, regardless of conditions on the ground. I think that's a wrong impression to give our friends. It's the wrong impression to give our enemies. It's the wrong impression to give the men and women who want to go over there and win, not start withdrawing on an arbitrary date.
Mike Mullen, chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, responded. He said the withdrawal will not be rapid and will be based on a midterm review.
Obviously, the July 2011 date is a day we start transitioning, transferring responsibility and transitioning. It's not a date that we're leaving. And the president also said that will be based on conditions on the ground.
Secretary Gates noted that the troop surge in Iraq lasted 14 months, which is 4 months shorter than the proposed time frame for Afghanistan. The officials reiterated the goals of the escalation, to control the Taliban, which intelligence has found does not have capacity to attack the U.S., but the administration said a destabilized Afghanistan would allow al-Qaeda to rebuild. Defense Secretary Robert Gates.
This area that we're talking about, Afghanistan in particular, is the epicenter of global extremist jihad.
The war strategy plans to move troops in quickly, fight in specific areas, especially the eastern border with Pakistan and the southern part of the country. Other important elements include training the Afghan army, police force, and local guard unit. Secretary Clinton said American civilians will team up with U.S. troops in Afghanistan. In Pakistan, she says, many more American civilians will be sent.
So our resolve in this fight is reflected in the substantial commitment of troops and in the significant civilian commitment that will continue long after combat forces leave.
Immediately after Obama's speech Tuesday night, Democrats released cautious statements, skeptical about the cost of war, which is expected to be at least $30 billion more per year. They were also skeptical about the difficulty of the task amidst a country full of corruption, a strong drug trade, and a weak government. Leanne Caldwell, FSRN, Washington, D.C.
In outlining his plan for Afghanistan last night, Obama narrowed the goal of the military operation to focus on al-Qaeda.
Our overarching goal remains the same: to disrupt, dismantle, and defeat al-Qaeda in Afghanistan and Pakistan, and to prevent its capacity to threaten America and our allies in the future. To meet that goal, we will pursue the following objectives within Afghanistan. We must deny al-Qaeda a safe haven. We must reverse the Taliban's momentum and deny it the ability to overthrow the government. And we must strengthen the capacity of Afghanistan's security forces and government so that they can take lead responsibility for Afghanistan's future.
To reach that goal, Obama ordered an additional 30,000 U.S. troops to be deployed beginning in 2010. Yet while the goal has been defined, the strategy to achieve a stable and safe Afghanistan remains contested. We're joined by Eric Lever. He's a research fellow with the Institute for Policy Studies, a progressive think tank based in Washington, D.C. Welcome to Free Speech Radio News.
Thank you for having me.
Well, as we heard last night in Obama's speech, and again today from Secretary of Defense Gates before Congress, a central concern is that without a strong U.S. military presence in Afghanistan, the region will become a breeding ground for al-Qaeda. How plausible is this?
If you actually look at the number of al-Qaeda operatives inside Afghanistan and in Pakistan, the number is actually quite small. Most analysts believe that that there's, you know, al-Qaeda numbers somewhere around 400 to 1,000 members within those two states. So now we're talking about having a deployment by the United States of more than 100,000 troops, plus tens of thousands of NATO troops, plus 100,000 U.S. contractors to battle against this very small number of people. So the, you know, the response is not very proportional. And again, if those are the numbers of al-Qaeda members that we've been battling for the last 8 years, one might suspect that we've had enough troops and firepower in the region to take care of that problem.
Now, a report last week from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee revealed that Osama bin Laden had been cornered in the Tora Bora area in the end of 2001, but was allowed to slip through possibly into Pakistan when attention shifted to Iraq. Reports also have Taliban operating in Pakistan now. What is the connection between militant violence in Pakistan and the situation in Afghanistan?
Well, the fluid border between the two countries has certainly allowed a freedom of movement of these figures between the two countries. But I think that you know, the problem sort of ends there. You're dealing with two different countries with, you know, vastly different trajectories and vastly different political and military structures. I think people calling it, you know, combining the two and calling it an AFPAC strategy. Now clearly, the same region of the world, and in some instance, we're, you know, dealing with the same people between the two different countries. But the solutions for both are vastly different.
So let's talk about those other solutions. At one point last night, Obama spoke directly to the Afghan people, saying that the U.S. was not interested in occupying the country.
So tonight, I want the Afghan people to understand. America seeks an end to this era of war and suffering. We have no interest in occupying your country. We will support efforts by the Afghan government to open the door to those Taliban who abandon violence and respect the human rights of their fellow citizens. And we will seek a partnership with Afghanistan grounded in mutual respect, to isolate those who destroy, to strengthen those who build, to hasten the day when our troops will leave, and to forge a lasting friendship in which America is your partner and never your patron.
So Obama seems to be making a point to say that America will be a partner, not a patron. What are some alternatives to the troop increase?
Well, many groups here in Washington had petitioned the White House and the Pentagon trying to offer alternatives, which would involve very similar to what we're seeing in Iraq, a set table for withdrawal, set conditions for providing international assistance to help rebuild the country, and international conference of trying to bring together the neighboring states to be able to talk about what a lasting peace would look like. Because while we're continually frightened with the rhetoric that President Bush and now President Obama is taking surrounding 9/11 and how those attacks were focused here at the U.S., the real problems in the region is what the fallout would be from the neighboring countries, and they're the ones that have the most to lose in this conflict.
We've been speaking with Eric Lever, a research fellow with the Institute for Policy Studies. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And in Afghanistan today, many woke up before dawn to watch President Obama's anticipated speech, which aired at 5:30 a.m. local time. Just 2 hours after the speech ended, General Stanley McChrystal spoke to reporters about what the additional troops will be doing.
There are some who are coming just to train, and they will operate on some of the training bases. There are also some forces that what we call enablers, rotary wing aviation, intelligence elements, and whatnot. But the vast majority of the force, the combat or maneuver forces, are going to partner. It's our goal to have every coalition force partnered with an Afghan force, and if every Afghan force partnered with a coalition force.
So far, we've heard from military leaders, the president, and administration officials on the troop surge. But what do Afghans think? FSRN's Kabul-based reporter Mujahid Jawad spoke to residents in the capital about their response to more U.S. troops in their country.
Today we have heard that the U.S. President Barack Obama has decided to send more troops to Afghanistan. On the other hand, also, the U.S. government, the Biden government, and their alliance announced that they would keep and continue their peace talk with Taliban in Afghanistan. So if we look at this aspect of their decision, so the Barack Obama new decision is in confrontation with it, because if they send more troops to Afghanistan, so definitely they want war instead of peace in Afghanistan. What we want is peace in Afghanistan, so we believe in peace and we want in peace. And finally, what our overall wishes are for the future of Afghanistan, just want peace.
Yes, I think this was the right decision, because if USA does not send more troops to Afghanistan, then believe it, Taliban will come again into power. And believe it, warlords and criminals will have their own private government in every street of Kabul.
To bring American troops for bringing peace in Afghanistan, this is nonsense, and this is not a solution for Afghanistan's future and people. Because if they send American troops to Afghanistan, so it will affect for Afghanistan's future and people, but also... Taliban will increase their attacks, and civilian casualties will be also increased. It's also, again, bad. But the solution is that Afghan security forces must be strengthened.
In general, we can say that this new strategy has many positive points. With these additional troops, now the number of American soldiers would rise to 100,000. Besides that, other U.S. allies also have between 30,000 and 40,000 troops in Afghanistan. If, in the coming 2 years, Afghanistan finds the strength to train an additional 150 to 200,000 Afghan security troops, then it is possible for them to defend the country. But again, it depends on the international community and the Afghan government whether these commitments and assistance are fulfilled.
As you know better, U.S. President Barack Obama announced tonight that
U.S. will send additional 30,000 troops to Afghanistan. So do you think, is it the right way to solve Afghanistan's problem?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. No, this is not the way that to solve the Afghan crisis. The additional troops coming to Afghanistan, this will increase human losses and casualties to both sides, to the American side as well as to the Afghani side. This troop increase is not the solution. The solution is just to start dialogue and stop war, and stop killing people, human beings. So why we are doing, we are killing people by our own hands, by our own made weapons, and especially to the American government, it is necessary to think about that they should stop war and start negotiation with the oppositions, and this is the only way to finish the Afghan crisis.
You just heard Kabul resident Saidullah Rishteen, a law faculty graduate student, Ahmed Zia, an IT engineer, Fahima Brishna, a computer engineer, Afghan political expert Ahmed Saidi, and Ahmed Shai Ahmadzai, the head of the Islamic Research Center and the former deputy of jihadi leader Ostad Abdul Rab Rasul Sayaf. FSRN's Mujahid Jawad recorded and produced this segment. The international community is expressing growing concern about Israeli policies in East Jerusalem. A new report by an Israeli rights group says Israel revoked residency status for more than 4,500 residents of East Jerusalem in 2008, by far the largest number in the last 40 years. Meanwhile, a classified report from European consuls obtained by the Israeli paper Haaretz criticizes Israel for deliberately altering the demographics of East Jerusalem and working to cut it off from the West Bank. The annual report, which has never been made public, urges EU officials to act to protect Palestinians, including issuing sanctions. In recent days, Israeli settlers have also attempted to install building foundations in the West Bank to bypass a government freeze on new construction. FSRN's Ghassan Banora has the details.
The Israeli government said last week it would halt construction on new settlements for 10 months in an attempt to restart talks between Palestinians and Israelis. But in recent days, an Israeli human rights group found that settlers were boring cement in the shape of building floors so that it would look like foundations in aerial photo. Hagit Ofran is head of Peace Now Settlement Watch.
As for the fake foundations, the decision on the freeze says that if you already have foundations of the house, you can finish it. The set decided to try to fool the inspectors into to make a fake foundation, which means that they put a thin layer of cement on the ground so that if somebody comes, he might think that it's actually a foundation.
Many Palestinians were already skeptical of the announcement of the Israeli construction freeze. Khalil Al-Tafakji is a Palestinian expert on settlement issue.
This is a smokescreen. Israel is trying to get away with two things. First is to exclude Jerusalem from the negotiations, and second is to maintain that settlement activity is part of Israel's policy. Israel announces a halt in settlement activity once in a while, but if you look at the past settlement activity, it increases during the peacetime.
Over the past few days, settlers also attacked Palestinian property. There has been no injuries reported among Palestinians, but cars and other property sustained damage. Ghassan Banoura, FSRN, Bethlehem.
Hundreds of pro-choice advocates gathered in Washington today to protest anti-abortion amendments to the health care bill. Conservative Democratic Senator Ben Nelson announced plans to introduce an amendment similar to the Stupak Amendment that is part of the House bill. That measure would restrict access to abortion for women under certain plans. But Democrats say stall tactics by Republicans in the Senate are crippling votes to amendments in the health care bill. FSRN's Matt Pearson reports.
Hundreds of protesters, mostly women, came to listen to speeches and lobby lawmakers on abortion legislation on Wednesday. Alex McNeil was in attendance as a youth representative for the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Freedom, a pro-choice interfaith coalition. She said she was encouraged by the turnout.
I feel like the energy in this room is amazing. We have a lot of people who may not even be of faith themselves, but want to support the fact that, you know, we don't want to enshrine one religious belief into the healthcare system.
For weeks, many rights groups have been voicing concerns about the Stupak Amendment, saying it would threaten women's health. Lori Rubiner is from the Planned Parenthood Federation of America, the group who organized the rally.
Women using their own money to purchase health insurance would not be allowed to purchase health insurance that includes coverage for abortion, which is a legal medical procedure in this country. So that is not an acceptable amendment, and we're not going to allow that to happen.
The Stupak Amendment was included in the House health care bill that passed in November. Even though the law would only affect women purchasing insurance through the government exchange, some experts and health insurance officials think it will affect private insurers too. Rubiner says that's why pro-choice advocates have mobilized.
It's just really exciting that so many women from around the country, we've got people from North Dakota, California, I mean, really all over the country came together very quickly because thank you, Congressman Stupak, for galvanizing the women's movement. So we appreciate that.
Meanwhile, in the Senate, a similar amendment is making its way to the floor. Conservative Democrat Ben Nelson of Nebraska has announced plans to introduce abortion legislation with Stupak's language in the Senate's health care bill. But amendments to the bill are moving very slowly through the Senate floor. Republicans are using their procedural powers to slow down the amendment process. Nelson doesn't know if his bill will even get a vote on the Senate floor.
I'm continuing to work as though it will, but I hope it gets at least an up or down vote.
But many amendments won't even come to a vote due to lengthy debates on the Senate floor. Republican senators on Wednesday welcomed the lengthy debate, but Democrats were growing frustrated. Senator Dick Durbin.
There is little appetite on our side of the aisle for going a marathon stretch of 30 hours waiting for cloture votes. I think our patience will run out before then. If this is not a genuine good faith effort on the part of Republicans to offer meaningful amendments and submit them to a vote, then I think you're going to see this process moving to a conclusion.
As Democrats weigh their procedural options, Republicans continue to take their time on the floor. Two amendments that were scheduled to be put to a vote on Tuesday were still in debate Wednesday afternoon. Unless the Democrats find a way to speed up the process, the Christmas deadline for passage of the bill appears to be in jeopardy. Matt Pearson, Free Speech Radio News, Washington.
Before we end today, a correction to last Wednesday's story about landmines and the U.S. refusal to join the mine ban treaty. In citing statistics about landmines, we said landmines killed more than 5,200 people worldwide last year. That figure actually includes both deaths and injuries. In 2008, some 1,200 people were killed and more than 2,800 injured, according to Landmine Monitor. FSRN regrets the error. And that wraps up today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Today's headlines editor was Jess Burns. Washington, D.C. editor was Leanne Caldwell. Our technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Rose Katapchi and Scott Pham. You can visit us online at fsrn.org. You can send questions, comments, or news tips to comments@fsrn.org. Thanks for listening. In New York, I'm Doran Marina.